You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
So Bills Colts, Josh. That should be fun, right? We're not overlooking them, are we?
The Bills play a game this week?
It's not Chiefs week yet. I'm having a tough time with that, Josh. I'm having a very tough time with that.
It's hard because I want to say that and be completely serious, but I'm not. I'm honestly like everyone thought last week might be a trap game. I'm scared about this one.
This is the one for you.
This is the one where I'm scared because Jonathan Taylor. First of all, when he did that to the Bills, not only did he do that to the Bills, he did that to me. In a fantasy football game to like, I don't remember what week that was in that year, but it just tanked my fantasy season. Whether it was playoffs or like close to playoffs, for whatever reason, I didn't win a championship that year because of Jonathan Taylor. I can't remember if it was playoffs or like just outside of playoffs, but he's the reason why one of my best fantasy football teams did not win the championship.
That's a shame. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. I don't want to say I am overlooking the Colts, but I am at a point now where like I am very much directing most of my energy towards next Sunday at 4:25. Like, that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
And
right.
I don't feel great about it, but like I'm a fan. Like, that's what I'm going to end up doing is just. We're going to get to tweets here in just a second because I put out the vibe check and how are we feeling. And you can join the show as well, 803-0550, the number to call. How are you feeling about this Sunday? But like, since like week three, I've been looking forward to January. They started the season 3-0, and I was like, cool. All right. So all the fears that they're not going to be a playoff team, those were exaggerated. We're going to be fine. I'll see you in January. Now we're kind of getting through the season. Some of the big games are coming up, Kansas City, San Francisco, Detroit, what have you. I'm finding myself looking more forward to these, and I'm not going to fight against it either. I won't be watching this game. I'm going to be catching up on it as I go. I'm going to be in a Charlotte airport for the entirety of the game. So, I mean, that's going to be a big reason why, is that I'm going to be trying to catch up on it on Twitter rather than, like, fully watching it. And part of me is also like, I mean, we talked with Kevin Bowen yesterday, and even the rushing yards point. We brought up Jonathan Taylor, and he goes, well, he was great with Anthony Richardson. He's less so with Joe Flacco. And so that kind of leads me to think, like, okay, all right. Like, so am I, like, freaking out a little bit too much? Because I think you're right. A lot of Bills fans, especially after seeing what Devon Achane was able to do last week, what Derek Henry was able to do a few weeks ago, there is some nerves. Now, I will say, I know Joe and Jeremy brought it up, the rush defense is not a disaster. I just look up real quick here in terms of yards per game. They're 15th in the league at 123.4. I do know, though, that, like, the Seattle game probably played a big part into that. I think they gave up like 39 total rushing yards and was like good for like 1.8 yards per carry.
Right.
But I think that is something too of like you look at the two rushing games that got them as bad as they did. I think one, a big part of it with Baltimore was that's how they build their offense. Their offense is built to beat you running the ball. Plus, you do have to worry about the running ability of Lamar Jackson. You always have to worry about that. Doesn't matter how good of a team you are, you have to worry about that. And then with the Dolphins, it was how quickly they're getting the ball out of Tua's hands, whether that be quick handoffs to get it to Devon Achane or him throwing the ball. I think also it was just a poor run defensive game by the Bills. They did not set the edge well at all. I think that's completely fair to say. I don't look at the Colts, though, even with Jonathan Taylor as a game that I'm thinking like, here we go. I mean, they're going to score all over them. Like, they're just going to dominate time of possession. And I don't know. They're only a four-point favorite. I think four and a half, depending on. Four and a half.
Most, like, I think every single book has them at 4.5.
And so for that, I'm sitting there looking and going, you'll be fine. I guess. Like, in the worst way, I'm sitting there, like, you'll be fine. They're getting somewhat healthier. We'll see about the additions of Jordan Phillips and Quentin Jefferson. I like that Sean McDermott, when speaking to the media about it, wasn't like immediately like they're going to slot right in, even though they are. I think, I mean, they signed one-year deals. They're right to the 53-man roster, but he's like, we got to see what shape they're in and stuff like that. They haven't played all that much this year.
Yeah. I think they'll – okay, the getting in shape point is a good point, but I do think they'll be key pieces of this team. I mean, it's not like the defensive structure has changed all that much since – they left. I mean, especially for Jordan Phillips, it was, what, a year ago? right?
For Phillips?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I thought he left a while ago.
No, because he left and came back and then left again, I thought.
Oh, I'm probably thinking of Quentin Jefferson.
You are thinking of Quentin Jefferson.
Yeah, because I was going to say...
Quentin Jefferson was here for 1 year in 2020, which, again, that's not super long ago, but at the same time, the defense hasn't changed that much.
Phillips spent time here in 23, yeah.
Yeah,
and then, okay. And then this year it's been New York and the Cowboys. Because Jefferson, I was talking with WBEN's Lucas Buckley mm-hmm. yesterday, and we were both like, do you remember Quentin Jefferson? And we're both like... Very little, though. Yeah. So yeah. Phillips was here last year. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Yeah. No. And like I said, like I think that maybe they won't be factors right away this week, but this is kind of a nice ramp up week for next week, right? Like this is again not trying to overlook the Colts, but if you're going to have your guys come in on short notice essentially and play a soft opponent, this is kind of the week to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you have to worry about is Jonathan Taylor. I mean that seriously. Like Joe Flacco has shown me nothing in terms of, you know, what he had last year and anything he had coming into this season. If Michael Pittman's out, then you have to watch Josh Downs, Alec Pierce, and Adonai Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Bills secondary can contain that. I'm saying that not so confidently, well, but at the same time.
I'm saying that fairly confidently. I mean, you're getting Christian Benford back.
Mm-hmm.
I think the safeties have been fine. We've got a lot of calls on especially before the trade deadline of what do you want to see the Bills add? And safety was, I would say was number one. Defense as a whole was number one, but I would say safeties kind of led the way there. They've been fine. The Bills clearly like DeMar Hamlin better than most fans. I would fully say that. I would also like to see more of Cole Bishop. We'll see if that starts to happen now that Mike Edwards, I mean, he barely played on defense anywheres. It's more, you know, Taylor yeah. Rapp, DeMar Hamlin, and then Cole Bishop, I think, is going to be the future guy going forward. But they're getting healthier on the secondary with having both Rasul Douglas and Christian Benford back. You saw how important he was to the defense. You saw how important Teron Johnson was to the defense when he was out as well. I guess a big thing for me, too, is I thought Miami played the perfect game last Sunday. Like, that was a major part of it for me, is they played the perfect game. That was Tua, by a mile and a half, his best game against the Bills. And they still lost. Did the Bills play perfect? No. I've already mentioned the edge setting was terrible by the Bills defense.
Yeah. But again,
and they still won. I look at the Colts. I can't see the Colts ever playing a game that Miami did. I can't see the Colts playing a game that Baltimore did.
I
can't see it.
I think you look at the edge setting thing, though, and I wonder how much that has to do with the fact that they get the Dolphins get the ball out so quickly. Right, like I think that you couldn't really establish anything on the edge with Greg Rousseau and Von Miller mm-hmm. because of the fact that Tua would just get the ball, get it out of his hands. Mm-hmm. Like it's something where it's like, yes, you want your edge rushers to be able to get in there, but if he's getting the ball that fast, mm-hmm. I don't really know if they can get in there faster.
Yeah,
right. Like because there was one highlight of I think it was Greg Rousseau.
It was really early in the game. It was a high snap, and he's able to go in and get a sack.
Yeah, and he put the
that was
he
kind of about
put
it.
The dude in a blender to get around him, and yeah. It's like you have to have a perfect swim move or spin move or some kind of move to get around the tackle every single time to be able to get to the Dolphins effectively.
Yeah,
and that's why they're mm-hmm. becoming a little. You know, there's potential for them to be dangerous, I should say.
Yeah.
The Colts are a completely different team. They don't really play with that play style. They don't have the wide receivers to do that. They don't have the quarterback to do that. I mean, Joe Flacco can get the ball out, sure, but he's not Tua.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm not saying that's anything great or anything like that, but mm-hmm. at the same time, Joe Flacco's almost 40. The only thing they do have, again, is Jonathan Taylor. That's the one piece that terrifies me week in and week out.
Also sounds like Michael Pittman. So, I mean, even like one of the receivers, Michael Pittman, did not practice yesterday with a back right. and a finger injury. And talking with Kevin Bowen yesterday, he was kind of even up there in terms of like, I mean, they're having him play, but he's had 2 catches off 10 targets over the last 2 weeks.
Is it one of those things where it's like kind of a, he really wants to play, but he probably shouldn't because of the injury. And they're just like, well, we have nobody else, so let's just do it.
I mean, it could be that.
Because you've seen those. You've seen athletes do this in every single sport where they have yeah. something lingering, and they're just no, coach. I'm fine. Okay, I guess we'll play you then. And then it's like
I think what's terrible is I blame that on the coaching staff immediately.
Right, no, for sure.
Baker Mayfield is maybe the perfect example in Cleveland where his play was clearly compromised by an injury.
Yeah.
He played through it, the team got worse, and then they punished him for it.
Right.
I think you can almost, I'm not saying the Colts are going to punish Michael Pittman for playing bad now, but like, to Kevin's point yesterday, he clearly doesn't look right.
Yeah.
Two catches off 10 yard or off 10 targets, not good by any means.
Right, and I'm not saying that at all is Pittman's fault. I think, like you said, the coaching staff needs to step in and say, look, like, we understand you want to play, and we understand you're probably one of our best players, but you can't play right now.
Yeah, but, like,
that,
no.
Like, there's – at this point for the Colts this season, I'm not saying it's a lost season for them, but it kind of is. You don't really want to hurt a player that could help you in the long run. Same with a guy like Jonathan Taylor. Not to say you don't play Jonathan Taylor, but if a guy is hurt or potentially, like, lingering or dealing with an injury – why even try to sacrifice him and for what? A win to make you, what are they, 2-7 right now?
No, actually they're in a weirdly solid spot. They're 4-5.
Oh, geez, that makes it so much harder.
That's the weird spot with the Colts where, like, they feel like a team that has two wins. Because, I mean, you bench Anthony Richardson and the vibes there are really off. But it's like, well, actually, you've won games.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying they're, you know, going to make a run for the playoffs now. But, like, you've won games. You've been okay. You're about a 500 football team.
I really thought they were much worse than that in terms of win-loss. I
feel like even they think they're way worse than that. So you're not off.
I mean, if you look at the way they're setting themselves up, it kind of feels that way. Right? Like, it's tough to look at them and say, yeah, no, they're a team that's 4-5 in a bad bad division, and, like, maybe they can eke something out in terms of wild card. Maybe.
My thing, though, too, on that, like, I'm not for how the Colts have handled the Anthony Richardson thing, mainly because I don't care for, we got to make a wild card. Like, right. Who cares?
Yeah.
Pittsburgh has been doing that for years of they show up to the wild card and they get killed.
Yeah.
And the season feels lost by week six, but they're just going to be good enough to get in.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, that's where for me, too, after the Bills broke the playoff drought, then it became, okay, but now you need to, like, compete in the playoffs. That's why it was so important to not keep Tyrod Taylor, but go get Josh Allen. Or just go get a franchise quarterback rather than, we'll just be here, we'll be happy to be, you know, middling, and just show up for our yearly, you know, butt-whooping in the wild card round. The Colts are already there with how many different quarterbacks they've had since Andrew Luck retired. We went through that yesterday. 10 of them. Anthony Richardson's the only guy in those years to start in two different seasons. They keep going back to that well. They gave up on Richardson after 10 starts. And I guess that's a big part of it, too, for me, is I just don't look at the Colts right now as a serious organization. I look at the Bills as a very serious organization and a very well-run organization for all the complaints we have. And that's where I cannot see them dropping games like this. Even you look at this year, too. The games they dropped were to a talented Houston team, which ultimately, after they saw their issues in that game and the Baltimore game, they addressed them immediately by going to get Amari Cooper, a week later after they beat the Jets.
Yes.
And then for Baltimore's one of the best teams in football. Mm-hmm. And it's a bad trick play call away from you maybe making it a game.
The momentum side of things.
But to be fair, you're not going to win them all.
Yeah.
You know, even in the Bills' best seasons, they're going to have like three or four losses.
Right. But I also look at the Colts in terms of what they are as a franchise, and I think we see this in football more than any other sport, is you have ownership groups and management groups not ready to just let go and start fresh. The Bills are one of the few teams that have done that in recent memory, in my opinion. And you look at the Steelers, they've done that for years. You look at the Colts right now, I don't know if the Bengals are quite there yet. The Cowboys are definitely one of those teams where it's, oh, we're just going to keep running it back with Dak. It'll work eventually. At some point, you have to pull the plug and just restart. I mean, the Bears have done that three times now, essentially. Mm-hmm. They did it with Mitch Trubisky. Didn't work. Waited a little too long with that one. Did it with Justin Fields. Didn't wait too long. Now you have Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze, and you might be heading in the right direction, kind of. You still have some work to do, but you're at least going somewhere. It's not like you're just stagnant. There's other teams in here, too. The Seahawks are kind of that way, but they had to pivot really quick when Russell Wilson left, so I can't really fault them yet because they still have been somewhat successful.
Yep.
But I just look at teams like that, and especially like the Colts, like we're looking at this week. I just don't understand why you can't just let go, move on, and start fresh. I know it's hard, and it's hard to convince a fan base to go through "quote unquote" a rebuild. But with the Colts, it's if you would have done this when Andrew Luck retired, right?
Rather than try to, well, I think that's...
Like now it's awkward and hard because you've been waiting so long. But if you did it in 2019...
But go back to that season, though. They had just ascended to like, oh, we're going to be really good.
Yeah.
Oh, we're here. Like, Luck is healthy. The offensive line's awesome. We've got young weapons, what have you. Like, that was stunning when he retired. Because
right.
they
that
were
true.
They were building towards it.
That was a
there,
shock.
There was no chance to rebuild there. Because you had this young team that you were thinking like, okay, here we go. And it fell flat.
But in
now,
years,
I think after 2 or 3 years,
right.
yes.
In years since, they should have definitely... You know, restarted a little bit, and then also not drafted someone that was a big maybe.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying Anthony Richardson can't be anything, but through 2 years, he's only played 10 games, and it seems like he's not gelling with the organization or whatever is happening there. Just isn't working right.
I am frustrated though. I really want to see him play the Bills.
Yeah,
because he was a prospect I really liked coming out of Florida. Because I'm always going to draft the freak. If you have if you have a good coaching staff, you can get that freak to be. Well, what Josh Allen is or what Patrick Mahomes is.
Right, and that's the thing,
you know,
too. Like,
you know, to a more inconsistent aspect, but from a few years ago, Cam Newton.
Yeah.
And you can then all of a sudden, like, they're the franchise guy, and they cause problems for everybody. And it's just he has not worked even once. You have highlight plays. And for a fantasy owner last year, too, to start the year, he was rushing touchdown after rushing touchdown, passing touchdowns. Even to start this year, he completes, what, 5 passes in week 1, but one of them is a 75-yard bomb. And you're like,
right.
Okay, I can get behind that.
If you can get that a little more isolated, then sure. But the thing is like, there's always one every year since Allen has kind of risen to where he is, and it was Trey Lance a few years ago. It was Anthony Richardson last 2 drafts ago. But there's always a quarterback now that gets compared to Josh Allen. And that's like, it's kind of fun and exciting because it's, hey, the Bills have a player that the rest of the league is looking for. You know, and... Like we've always talked about, you and I lived through the drought where it was just, hey, what are we gonna do? and now
the
it's
hopes and prayers of Trent Edwards.
But now it's exciting to see that sort of thing where it's like, you know, and it's also fun to see those types of players kind of come into their own because we saw what happened with Allen where it changed basically overnight in an offseason. But I think what's different between Allen and guys like Trey Lance and Anthony Richardson is they came in with those comparisons, with those expectations, but then they never put in the work in the offseason or had the right people say, hey, this is what you're doing wrong. Let's address this. Let's fix it. Allen did. Allen actively seeked out people in the offseason with Carson Palmer and completely changed his throwing motion.
I wonder, too, though, you put it like the right people around them, but also like for both Trey Lance and Anthony Richardson. And we'll get to your tweets here in just a second. And we're also taking your calls, 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to give a vibe check here as the Bills get ready to take on the Colts, look at both those players. The limited amount of game time they had in college, the limited amount of snaps, and then not being able to really play or figure it out. Like, I think they actually are very similar in the sense of an injury, and then basically their team was like, we're done. We cannot wait for you.
Yeah.
Trey Lance... He was incredibly raw, barely played at North Dakota State. Did not help either that COVID ruined the FCS season, so he got like essentially a showcase game, and that was about it.
I mean, look at the numbers between Allen and Richardson in college. So Richardson played 3 years at Florida. He had 3,105 passing yards, 24 passing touchdowns, and played a total of 24 games. Allen, in 3 years at Wyoming, played a total of 27 games, but had 5,066 passing yards. 44 touchdowns, 28 of those in one season.
And this is the thing, too. Like, he fully started 2 of those years.
Right. And also,
he was going to start 3 years,
yeah.
but he gets hurt, I think, game 1 against Eastern Michigan. And then
he played 2 games in 2015.
Okay, 2 games.
So, yeah. But the other important thing to note here is look at the way their teams played with that quarterback. Anthony Richardson threw 393 pass attempts, Josh Allen threw 649.
Which is crazy because that was a big thing coming out of Allen is that his team didn't throw the easy throws. It was a very quote-unquote pro style. He didn't get the bubble screens that Baker Mayfield got and stuff like that. And that was a thing too because I think Baker then had like double Allen's passing attempts. So then, yeah, you look at Richardson's and you're like, that's not good. And I know there's been a big talking point now in draft circles about quarterbacks coming out too of like, if you haven't started for 2 years, don't come out of college, stay in and start another year because teams, whether it's right or wrong, are not willing to wait for you.
Yeah.
Again, like the Trey Lance thing too, he doesn't play his rookie year, then is going to come in, play his sophomore year, breaks his ankle, and that's it. I mean, that's effectively it.
Right. And it's also, if you look at Richardson too, I know, you know, he only played three less games than Allen,
mm-hmm.
but one, COVID could have had an impact on this because in 2020 was his freshman year. He played four games that year. You know how many passes he threw?
Like 15.
Two.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
In four games, he threw two passes. Now, I don't know if he, it doesn't say if he started or it just says he played in the game.
Yeah, I think he was.
So it could have
like
been later in those.
I think that's a rushing package that they had for him.
Right. So, but still, you play in four games, you only throw two times as a quarterback. That's not great, regardless of what you're going into the game for. Like, it's just your team is not using you the way you should be utilized. Next year, he plays eight games, throws 64 passes in eight games.
Mm. Yeah.
The year after,
he used as a thrower.
Here's the massive jump. In 2022, his sophomore season, technically, because COVID and everything gave him an extra year of eligibility if he would have stayed, he played 12 games and threw 327 passes. That's a massive jump from 64.
And it's still not even that much.
No, but it's just crazy to look at some of these numbers. Like the way
that's his
broke
only
down.
Year of starting. He right. plays four games in 2020. Starts none of them. He plays in eight games in 2021. He only starts one. And then in 2022 he starts all 12 games that year. They go 6-6. The colleges, you see it too. They're not there really to develop you. It's the ugly truth. They're there to win games now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great. It's not ideal, but it's also why situations like Arch Manning at Texas are so weird that he's actually staying. And I do mean that as like, I'm happy Texas is doing it. I also know Arch is a different cat than most other guys.
Yeah.
Those guys would have left already because I need to go start now.
He's also in a different situation too because of the fact that he's highly regarded as such a good prospect in terms of what he can do.
Yeah.
He's someone where I think he'll stay in college for like two more years.
It does sound like, just from everything how the Mannings have talked, that he will then play for 2 years. He'll play next year and then he'll play the year after.
Yeah.
And to be fair, you have the Manning family around you. They'll probably dictate it perfectly because I know Peyton Manning talked about like being very frustrated at himself for not just, as he put it, just taking a deep breath, walking around. He was running everywhere. And then his senior year, he was kind of able to just relax.
I mean, you have
just
two,
play football.
You have two Hall of Famers as your uncles. I think you're going to be fine.
Eli Manning, I think started for 2 years, but played for or had starts within 3 years.
Yeah.
Manning started his freshman year as well. Arch will start his redshirt sophomore year, and then probably play 2 years, and then he'll take the jump.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird spot they're in. I think it's the most fascinating thing about the Colts. It's why I'm also frustrated Anthony Richardson's not playing. I don't care to watch 39-year-old Joe Flacco play for the Colts, especially when I'm looking ahead to Kansas City next week. It's like, that's the game I actually want to watch. I think the Bills will be 8-2. I know there's some worries. We'll get to these tweets after a quick timeout, but real quick here, Joshua, definitely not overlooking, could go either way. If Coleman and Cooper are good to go, let's go. But if either one of them is unavailable this week, he thinks it's going to be a slugfest, especially if the defense can't slow down the Colts running attack. I think they can. I think a lot of it comes down to just how good is the Colts passing game going to be. I think that's a big, if the Bills are able to just zero in on get to Flacco, get to the run game, you'll be fine. He's not going to throw the ball nearly as fast as Tua, and he has zero escapability like a Lamar Jackson does. And I think that's going to be the major difference here, is that there is no special attribute their quarterbacks have. For everything that we complain about Tua or give him crap for, the man gets the ball out quick, and he puts it right where he needs to. If you take him off his rhythm, it's another thing. But if he gets it out fast enough, he's good. And then Lamar, of course, is a Josh Allen-level athlete, if not more so, that can just make magic out of nothing. And then, of course, Derrick Henry is a one-of-one running back. He just simply is. He's on pace for another 2,000-yard season, which I think he might be the first running back in NFL history to have two 2,000-yard seasons. I mean, it's something else, and I don't put the Colts in that category. I love Jonathan Taylor, I do, but even talking with Kevin Bowen yesterday, his rushing numbers when Joe Flacco is in go down compared to Richardson. And that's my thing too. If Richardson was playing, I'd be more scared. Even with his inefficiency, even with the fact that he doesn't complete a high volume of passes, his running ability, his escapability, his size, the arm, that scares me more than Joe Flacco would. 803-0550 is the number to call. Got to take our first time out here. Sal Capaccio will join the show in the 11 o'clock hour. Didn't really get much of an injury update. on Keon Coleman. It's still pretty up in the air. I'm more of a glass half empty kind of guy when it comes to that, but we will see. Vibe check on the Colts. We'll read your tweets, get your calls after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, hanging out with you here on the Extra Point Show. So get ready for Bills and Colts this Sunday at 1 p.m. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com and go to the phones as David is on the line. David, how are we doing this morning?
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. What to talk about basically next week's game. Well, this week's game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really not looking forward to it. Only reason is because it doesn't seem like Flacco is in sync with the players that he has. He's had to jump from team to team to just get these players where they want them to be. And I think with bringing in these two defensive players that knows what our defense is, I think that's a big plus because of the fact we can be able to just put them right into the game. Our offense looks absolutely great right now. And going into this week, the only thing I think is, like everybody else has been stating, is containing the run on Jonathan Taylor. If we can contain that run on Jonathan Taylor, I don't see how this game cannot just be, I don't want to say a blowout, but a very hand-in game.
Yeah, David, I agree, man. Thanks for the call. I'll say blowout. That's fine. I'll do it. Because I think that's right. I think David's right on a lot of points. If you can stop Jonathan Taylor, it should be a pretty easy game. And on the Joe Flacco point, too, he has had one good game. He has started four for the Colts. It's been one good. He has seven touchdowns to two picks. A lot of that is coming in one game. It was against Jacksonville. He went 33 for 44, 359 yards and three touchdowns.
And we all see what the Bills did for Jacksonville.
I was going to say, we should all see what Jacksonville is.
How does Doug Peterson still have a job?
I think partially that is just we're just going to wait to the end of the year. There's no reason to put an interim guy that we're not really going to give an honest look at as a head coach. We're just, let's get through this year, get a high draft pick, and then we'll go get our next coach. We'll make a run at Ben Johnson or whatever.
I don't want to go too far off on that, but what would Ben Johnson do with Trevor Lawrence? Would it be anything?
I think the problem is with Trevor Lawrence now is it sort of seems like some of the bad habits are stuck in.
Right.
He is not making great throws. He'll have moments, though, where he does. It's just not consistent enough, and so I think the luster on him has worn off. He is truly the guy that, like, the new car drives off the lot, and then immediately the value depreciates. He's the guy that's like, well, I've owned the car for like 2 years, but it's a 2022. And it's like, well, yeah, but like,
how many miles are on it, bud?
Yeah.
100,000?
And like, you like to hit potholes.
Right.
So
yeah. You've driven across the country three times? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sorry. And so
you go to London every year? Great.
Great.
Sorry. Back to the Colts.
On David's point, I know we misspoke, but I started laughing when he goes, I'm looking forward to next week's game. And I'm like, yep, same. So am I. And that's, I feel bad. Our producer here today, Trevor Howard, is a Colts fan.
He's got the Colts hat on and everything.
And I feel bad because, like, I'm telling him in the break, and I'm like, dude, it's not that I don't want to play your team. I don't care to watch this game. I'm ready to let's get to
the next one. He doesn't care to watch this game.
My only motivation is just loyalty. That's all I have with this team right
now.
It's
the best.
So, like, everyone's gonna clown on me. How are you a Colts fan in Buffalo? I'm just like, loyalty. Peyton Manning's my favorite player of all time.
That's fair.
Ugh,
Josh Allen's just like Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Join the dark
except
side.
Peyton Manning couldn't run.
That's very
Manning had no wheels.
He had a great run against the Bills for a touchdown.
That he did.
One time.
Who could forget?
It's fine. Peyton Manning with the handoff fake bootleg. Iconic. Iconic.
I mean, he has a statue right outside of Lucas Oil Stadium. Rightfully so.
He built it. I mean,
that's the house that Peyton built.
Yep.
That and the RCA Dome, but yeah.
That's fine.
That's fine.
But, oh, man, like, I guess the Colts are an uncomfortable team, too, because I really bought into all the hype for them this offseason, them and Houston.
I mean, it was fair because, I mean, Richardson and Stroud were both very electric. And well, Stroud in a much different way.
But Richardson for, in a small sample size,
right, right.
You were excited about. And you were interested.
And then it's like, oh, what if he doesn't get hurt? What happens then?
Mm-hmm.
But again, what happens in the offseason is very important, especially after a rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, Richardson was hurt, so you got to wonder how that affects the offseason.
But then
for
you
him.
Saw what Shane Steichen was able to do in his first year there with Gardner Minshew. I think there was understandably some belief that, hey, like, they've got
a good coach,
here.
And it's a team that could win once they get their young guy.
Solid weapons, Michael Pittman Jr., Josh Downs, obviously we're seeing he's come along, but then they go out and draft A.D. Mitchell. And I guess there was this really belief that, like, they were going to take the next step you want to see, and instead it's been a clown show. I mean, again, like, we didn't even bring it up to Kevin yesterday, but hearing Jim Irsay's daughter is on the sidelines.
Yeah, that's weird.
With headphones on, and you're like, all right, I know Dallas is crazy, but come on. And,
yeah.
But then you remember Jim Irsay's the guy that tweets about all their transactions, and they don't actually have like a Colts PR page like the Bills have.
He's
their PR page. He's their PR page. So like, it makes all the sense in the world, but you're just like.
Like if she was an assistant coach, sure. But like, if she doesn't have a title and she's just hanging out down there, that's kind of.
That's insane.
It's like you're having like, just like the hawk watching over the mouse trying to make its next move.
Yeah, I don't.
Like ready to just fire Shane Steichen. It's such a weird move.
I don't like anything about this game in a very different way from where, you know, Baltimore. I was nervous. I don't like my feelings on this game, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But I was nervous they were going to lose. I don't like this game for the sheer fact of I don't really want to watch this game. I'll probably like a lot of the highlights afterwards, but knowing the Chiefs are next, and then the bye, and then San Francisco, you've got the meat of the schedule coming up, and I'm like, that's what I want to see right there. That's what I'm paying money to watch, you know, kind of deal.
There's a tweet that somebody tweeted at you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can find it real quick here. It's from JT. Yeah, right here. So from JT, not only should we beat Indy, but if Josh wants a real shot at MVP, this needs to be a highlight mm-hmm. game. I like our chances against KC. Our defense should perform well. The point about this being a highlight real game, that's 100% true. If this is really that bad of a team and you think the Bills can go out there and do that and you think Allen deserves MVP, these are the types of games where MVP caliber players go out there and put up 40.
Yeah, they put up, you know, four touchdowns. He's out of the game by the fourth quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
And granted, most of the second half talking points by the broadcast is, well, when you look ahead at their schedule, oh, who comes to Orchard Park next week? And that's what it becomes.
Right. But at the same time, though, you do have a lot of injuries to the wide receiver room.
That is a big thing because I mentioned it at the outset of the last segment, too, of just I'm a glass half empty kind of guy right now when it comes to the health of Keon Coleman. I think they are going to be sort of preparing him for either Kansas City next week or the bye week and get healthy. Sean McDermott has been sort of coy with how he phrases this when he's meeting with the media of, well, it's an ongoing situation. We don't know if it's going to be longer than this week, but he also isn't going to be ruled out for this week. And it's just, it's a bit much. It's a bit much for me.
Yeah.
And then Amari Cooper, I think, should be healthy. He was limited yesterday, but he was mm-hmm. limited all week last week. And I assumed that last week was more of just precaution. He's not totally there. We're gonna slow play this a little bit. And also yesterday was a walkthrough. If he's still limited today, I think that might be a signal of he may not be playing this Sunday. But if it's him, Shakir, Kincaid, I feel really good about that passing attack against a not great Colts defense.
And you also have Cook.
And Cook and Ray Davis.
They both have looked great. Ray Davis has popped off a few big catches, which that'd be interesting if that continues. I'd love to see that. If you have a pass-catching running back like Ray Davis that can just go out there and torch defenses.
I love what they have found in Davis and Cook.
Yeah.
I'm also now part of the group that wants Ray Davis to have more touches than
Ty Johnson?
No, than James Cook.
Oh.
I think I'm there with Ray Davis. He is more of the runner that I like watching, which is he just bounces off tackles.
Yeah, that's fair.
He makes the correct runs, what have you. And it feels like there's a big play with him 50% of the time he touches the ball.
What's his run, like, average yards per rush?
I can grab that for you here.
Let's see. Compared to James Cook. I'll pull up James Cook. You pull up Ray Davis. We'll do it that way. So James Cook this year.
I have them both. James Cook's at 4.6. Ray Davis is at 4.3. With that being said, though, James Cook has had 109 rushing attempts to Ray Davis' 61.
Fair. That's a good point.
Now, you could argue, though, that if Ray is up there, all of a sudden he's dropping out of 4 and that he's not going up. Because that was a big argument years ago with C.J. Spiller.
Yeah.
Where he has a great year, and then the moment they start giving him the rock a ton, his numbers dipped.
What is weird about that, though, is it feels like Ray Davis is going on longer runs. Like, it feels like every time he touches the ball, it's going to be a 7-yard run.
I think it's partially, too, because in his 10 receptions, he's averaging 14.9 yards per catch.
Whoa.
That also could be due to the 63-yard touchdown.
Right. And the 48-yard catch in the Jets game.
Mm-hmm.
42-yard?
42. So I think that might be a big reason why is that he's had...
Like, if you take those two out, then he's got 8 catches for how many yards?
Yeah. No, that's exactly what it is. He had 1 catch against Tennessee, 6 yards. 1 catch against Houston for 4 yards. 1 catch against Jacksonville for 1 yard. 1 catch against Miami that ultimately went for -1. And then 1 catch against Arizona that went for 14. It's those two plays.
Yeah.
It's those two plays. And that's what's building it up of, like, he's been awesome. Is he has a 42-yard catch and a 63-yard catch.
Done.
That's fair.
That stinks.
Nope, still there. I'm staying to it. I've
well,
loved,
it's obviously
I've
there.
Loved what I've seen from him.
Like, he's still a very good player, and he looks really good. And I do like him, but I think that James Cook, I think what they're at right now in terms of the split is good. I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of like a 60-40 split at this point.
He has been the better runner, though, over these last 4 games. Against Houston, James Cook, 20 rushes, 82 yards, good for 4.1 average. And then for Ray Davis against Houston, did he not play
nothing
against Houston?
Yeah. No rushes against Houston.
Yeah, no rushes against Houston. But then against New York, he goes 20 for 97, good for almost 5 yards per carry. Against Tennessee, 5 for 41, 8.2 yards per carry. Then for Cook, 12 for 32.
Hmm.
That's a big thing. I mean, that's below 3 yards per carry.
Right. I think that's why it feels like he's running 7 yards per carry, because the past 4 games, like, it's kind of recency bias, right? Like, it's the past 4 games that I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, he really wasn't anything in the first 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the past 4 games they've been leaning on him more. So it's like, that's just kind of...
It does feel like he's getting more touches. I don't necessarily know if that's true, but it does feel like he has now kind of become more of a focal point since the Jets game.
I mean, since the Jets game, he's had 35 rushing attempts.
And before that, yeah.
He had... He had just over 20.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're using him more. Again, I overall, though, they have a good rushing attack.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the thing, too, is it's nice that you have that two-headed monster,
mm-hmm.
essentially. And you can even throw Ty Johnson in there every once in a while, like a third down, a third and short kind of sort of situation.
Or a big pass play, because why not?
Yeah, right. And that's where it's...
Doesn't he have 2 of them?
He does.
Oh, my goodness.
I think. but that's where it's nice, because I feel like the absence of a guy like Keon Coleman and the potential absence for both, because Coleman's not ruled out yet, but the potential absence of Coleman and Cooper, if you just throw the ball to Ray Davis or throw the ball to James Cook or even Ty Johnson, like, those guys can get you as much yardages as Mac Hollins. They can get you more yardage than Curtis Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot to be desired there, and I think that's going to be a big piece this week if one of or both of Cooper and Coleman are out.
I'd be very surprised if both of them were out.
I would be too.
Very surprised. That would be the only time where I'd be nervous, because then you go back to Mac Hollins is one of your is your leading outside wide receiver. You've gotten 0 from Curtis Samuel. I cannot expect anything.
But honestly, though,
and then now
the
it's
way
Khalil
we're
Shakir, and I love Shakir, but he is best in the inside role,
mm-hmm.
and you're gonna have no one on the outside to drag any coverage away from him. That would be my only fear, is if both of them are out. Now all of a sudden, just purely based off of, you know, who you have left,
but the way
it becomes a close game.
But the way we've been talking about this game, though, even if Coleman and Cooper are out, how much does that move the needle?
For I think in terms of if you're
because the Colts the Colts offense still would probably be missing Michael Pittman, and it's still going to have Joe Flacco as quarterback.
Sure, I think for me it would. It's not going to end up moving, I think, the betting line.
No,
like,
no.
It'll probably stay 4 to 4.5. It might move down to 4, sure. In terms of how I feel about it, though, it will change. Now, all of a sudden, it will be a game I'm going to watch try to watch the entire thing or keep up on it aggressively, because it's now all of a sudden, I mean, you don't have any of your outside weapons. And it's due to wrist injuries out of nowhere that's like infecting the team.
Well, and also, too, if you look at the amount of rushing yards per attempt that the Colts have given up so far this year, it's about 4.4. Mm-hmm. And that's what your running backs are averaging.
Yeah.
But 4.5 rushing yards per attempt. And I'm not saying you have to rely on your running game, but if Cooper and Coleman are out, you could lean more into it than you normally do. I think you'd still be successful. I don't want it, and it wouldn't be like a blowout game, but I think it would still be a successful game. I think you'd still win.
Yeah, they just, that passing game, when they don't have the outside weapons they need, it goes away quick. And when you become so run dependent or pass dependent, it has caused problems this year for a number of teams, not just the Bills. But we've seen when they don't have their outside weapons, 9 for 30 against Houston, and they're not particularly dangerous this year, even with them being 6-3. 803-0550 is the number to call. Vibe check for this week's Colts game. We both feel pretty good about it up to this point. I think only there was just more certain injuries, certain, you know, inactives could maybe sway our opinions. I do want to give a thought when we come back after a quick timeout on tonight's game, Bengals and Ravens. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everybody. We got Thursday night football tonight. The divisional matchups. I've been loving the divisional matchups for Thursday night football because typically I always equate that. I mean, it starts the football week, but I equate it to terrible football, and namely the divisional matchups of the AFC South.
Terrible Thursday football.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best. As we heard Kevin Bowen said yesterday, the True TV division, when he's speaking about the AFC South and Thursday night football, I call them the Thursday night football specialists. Though tonight, we have Bengals at Ravens. The Ravens are debuting, I guess, like their cool all-purple look, including the helmet, which looks awesome. Mm. Very excited for that. It should
you like the helmet?
Oh, I like it a lot. Yeah. Oh. I'm a big fan.
All right.
And I know there was a little bit of hoopla this morning about who should be, or you know, who should the Bills fans be rooting for and what have you. And with that, we go to the phones here. Jerry on the line. Jerry, how are we doing today?
Hey, good morning, guys. I know it's probably early to talk about seeding, but I have a question. I've been thinking about this, and that is the fact that generally your top seeds are going to play obviously you're going to have the home field advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking about Baltimore. I don't want anything to do with Baltimore in the first round. So I'm thinking, wouldn't you want Baltimore to finish as high as possible? So that if you do have to play Baltimore, it would be either the divisional round or the AFC championship, so that you don't have to worry about playing Baltimore. They end up maybe a 4 seed, the lowest division. I don't think the Colts are going to catch them. So if they end up being the 4th seed, there's a better chance of you playing them in the second round than if they're higher.
Jerry, I think that's totally fair, and I can understand why Bills fans would not want to face Baltimore ever again. Thanks for the call. You're going to have to play them anyways. Whether it's in the wild card round, if they don't even win the divisional round, AFC championship, you'll probably have to see them again unless they get bounced early, which, to be fair, they have been known to do, especially when Lamar Jackson's been a quarterback. They have not been a team that typically does make deep playoff runs, last year being their first time at doing so. With all that being said, I don't care. I'd rather get teams at home. I'd rather,
right. Yeah.
That's where I'm at. I know the Bills at home the last few years have actually kind of like, I guess, disproven the theory that you want to get home playoff games. But if I'm looking at a team like Baltimore compared to a team like Kansas City, I'd much rather get Baltimore having to travel on the road.
You've beat
I
them at home
trust
before.
Them yet.
You've beat them at home before in the playoffs.
You beat them at home before in the playoffs, the famous pick six by Taron Johnson in 2020. And that's where I'm at. I'd much rather Baltimore and Houston keep losing games. Keep losing games. I don't want any tiebreakers. I want the Bills to be in that fight for the 1 seed. And I think that's the thing. And at Jerry's point, I don't think it's actually too early yet to be talking about seedings. We're at a point now, the Bills are 7-2. You know, they're looking to be 8-2 at this point. I think it's more than fair to be looking at seedings, especially when you've got Kansas City next week. And for me, that's my thing. I'd much rather Baltimore lose tonight to Cincinnati. Cincinnati maybe claw their way in there, but I'll be perfectly honest, Josh, I don't find Cincinnati to be as dangerous as they were the last few years when Buffalo had a very difficult time playing them. They are still good. I don't want to discredit them. They are still good. Just, I don't think they're that level that they freak me out at like they have the last 2 years. And if I can maybe be in that fight for the 1 seed, if I beat Kansas City next week, I don't want Baltimore potentially being there with tiebreakers.
Right.
That's mainly what I'm looking for. I want Baltimore and Houston away. I'll worry about that playoff matchup if it shows up. I'm right now worried more about the one seed. And for right now, if Baltimore and Houston keep dropping games and those tiebreakers mean nothing, that's where I'm at this point.
I'm right there with you. I think tonight is go Bengals, please beat the Ravens, and then after that continue to just kind of hang out in mediocrity.
I mean, or tie, because then it hurts everybody. 803-0550 is the number to call. Vibe check on the Colts game this weekend, or what are your thoughts on Thursday Night Football? I think we're both here, me and Josh, on the Bengals beating the Ravens tonight. Would love to hear your thoughts.
We are not both on the helmet, though. Well, the helmet's an abomination.
That's where you're wrong. Again, 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 12 o'clock. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.